I'm George Flynn. Welcome to In Depth TV. My guest today, County Commissioner Van Turner, District 12. County Commissioner Turner, we're so glad to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? Mm-hmm. Tell us about you first. We want to know who you are.
I appreciate it. It was great to be here with you, Dr. Flynn. I am a native Memphian. I was born and raised in an area of town called Whitehaven. Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to high school?
Went to Whitehaven High School.
Whitehaven High.
On Elvis Presley.
Okay.
Boulevard. And I left Whitehaven High and went to Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia. After obtaining my degree in English at Morehouse College, okay. I taught English in Japan.
Now, wait a minute. You first went and how did you decide to major in English first?
Well, my mother taught English.
Okay.
At Treadwell High School for a number of years.
The Treadwell Eagles.
Treadwell Eagles.
Okay.
And my father was a math teacher at Whitehaven High School.
Okay. So that was weird.
That was weird. He taught me algebra too.
I bet you knew how to do your homework.
I knew how to do it.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you did that. Your parents were teachers.
Yes, sir.
So you went to Morehouse in English.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then how did you decide to, you know, that's quite an experience mm-hmm. talking about teaching in, mm-hmm. in where was
in
it?
In Japan.
All right. What did you do there? How did you figure that out?
Well, we had a study abroad office at Morehouse mm-hmm. and wanted to take some time off before moving on. And this was an opportunity through JET, Japanese Exchange and Teaching. And I went there and I lived in Japan for 2 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was wonderful.
What did you learn by being there?
It was just an exciting time. I learned a lot about the culture. It's such a beautiful country, beautiful people. And we really, I was there with others, and we had an opportunity to travel all through Southeast Asia mm-hmm. because the flights were so cheap. So we could jump over to Korea, for instance, on the weekend or go down to Thailand, on a long break. So I was able to go to Thailand, to Indonesia, Philippines, Hong Kong, Korea. Man, I mean, it was really wonderful. Made it to Cambodia.
Oh, my gosh. So did you develop a taste for that food of that region?
Oh, yeah. I love sushi to this day.
Oh, you do?
I do. I had some yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, and so...
Do they make it the same here that they did there?
You can tell it's fresh, of course, there. But, I mean, we do a pretty good job here as well.
Okay.
And so it's not so bad.
Now, okay, so you came back here, and mm-hmm. what do you do here?
Well, I'm a lawyer. And so,
now, wait a minute. You went to English. You taught in Japan.
Right.
Then how did you decide to go to law school?
Well, I took the LSAT in Tokyo.
Okay.
And was able to get into University of Tennessee, Knoxville.
Okay.
And so I left Japan and went to UT Law in 1999.
Okay.
And I got out in 2002. And in 2002, with my law degree, I moved back home to Memphis. And
okay.
I've been here since 2002.
We're really glad that you moved back. And
yes,
so
sir.
Did you develop a law practice? Or
yes, sir.
And what type of law do you do?
Well, I first clerked for Hardy Mays, who's an esteemed
yes.
federal
mm-hmm.
judge here
mm-hmm.
in town. And
yeah.
after my clerkship with Judge Mays, I started practice at Glencliff Brown, a well-known firm.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went in-house with the Memphis City Schools Legal Counsel.
Okay.
For a few years. Left there and went to Butler Snow. In between, I did mm-hmm. a stint at Evans and Peachtree, which is another great
Well, I tell you, you don't look old enough to have done all of this. You probably, yeah. this sounds like you did these 1 week at a time or something.
No. Okay. I just turned 42 yesterday.
Okay. Well, you don't look.
Thank you.
So you've been with some law firms. You've been in-house with the city.
Right.
And now, how did you get interested in politics?
When I first got back into town, Harold Ford Jr. was bigger than life, right? He was, at that time, the congressman, and so I cut my teeth working, just doing grunt work on his campaigns.
Okay.
Yeah. So that started out, again, when I moved back in town, and from there, just got more involved in the politics in the city, and I was able to be the Democratic Party chair in 2009, and I served as chairman of the local party for two terms, which means 4 years.
Right.
So from 2009 to 2013, I was chair. I did not run again because I set my sight upon county commission and
mm-hmm.
was able to run and successfully be elected to District 12 of Shelby County Commission in 2014.
Now, would you do that? Because a lot of people say, a lot of people don't know the difference between the city council and the county commission. Mm-hmm. Why? What motivated you to want to do that? Just to serve people or what?
Yeah, and it was just timing. At the time, the county commission had changed sort of the how they operated via the districts. I know you served as a county commissioner. So what happened was they went to 13 single-member districts.
Right.
And so when that occurred, it opened up a seat. I didn't have to run against an incumbent. It was I was in the area, knew the area very well, and so I ran for the seat. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's probably why I was elected, the move to single-member districts and not having to buy against an incumbent, and it was an open seat. And, you know, it was a good opportunity.
What did you learn in campaigning? What did you learn about people? Because we want to get into what you think and why you think this. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about a campaign?
Well, you know, people want to see how government affects their day-to-day lives. It's one thing to see you on TV and to see what's all happening, but, you know, you really have to show and tell them how what you do affects them day-to-day. And once they get that, I think they get more involved and they're more inspired to vote and to participate.
And how does it affect them personally?
Correct.
That's what it is. And you seem to be able to, you know, verbalize that and have people understand.
Well, I appreciate that. I try to.
Well, the one of the things that we want to talk about is there's always a budget. Mm-hmm. We always hear about the budget. Mm-hmm. What is your view of the budget and what happens in the process and how money's allocated? Mm-hmm. What's your thinking on that?
Well, you know, I think that we should be fiscally responsible. I think that these funds are not our funds, they're the taxpayer dollars. And people work hard for their money.
They do.
And so if you tax them and you take what's theirs, you have to be responsible with the money. And so that's first and foremost. So what happens is basically we fund our budget through property taxes primarily. There are a few other taxes out there, and you know about those. But we take in the county property taxes, and we use that to really primarily fund education. When you look at our budget, 40% of our budget goes to education.
Right.
And so we have a $1.1 billion budget, so that means at least $400 million goes to education or more. And so Mike Swift, who's our outgoing director of finances, always says, how goes education, so goes the county budget. And so, you know, but it's something we really have to take serious, and we really have to make sure that we're ensuring that the schools are properly funded because the youth are our future, and we need to make sure that they're educated. So first and foremost, we need to be fiscally responsible. That's a goal. And we also need to make sure we do what we can to continue to support education.
Well, your parents both being educators, I'm sure you're very familiar with the needs of education, and we keep seeing this go up and up and up. And how do we know that education is being funded properly? And do we just go by test results? What would you say? What's your thinking on it?
Well, a lot of it depends on the results that we see from the schools. And when they make their reports, they have to come see us at least once a quarter and just give us an update of what's happening. And, you know, it's been difficult. In the past, there have been some challenges, but we do see improvement. The iZone, for instance, is a great example. That's where you have your best teachers go into your most challenging areas, and they really pull those scores up. They get parent engagement up, and they really do a good job in turning that school around. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot of that going on with ASDs, the achievement school districts, and you have charter schools. But, you know, I point to the iZone model as a successful model where I feel that the taxpayer dollars that we send to the school district are being used very wisely and are being used in a very practical and meaningful way.
How are the teachers, I don't know if you get down to that level, how are the teachers feeling about moving into a more challenging area? I wouldn't know how they'd feel about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that change is always difficult, but I think that's just, you know, what we're going to be dealing with going forward.
Right.
I mean, it's competition now. You're competing with charter schools. You're competing with the Achievement School District. You're competing, you know, in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just something that, you know, you have to prepare yourself for, and you have to know that it's going to evolve, and we have to evolve with those times.
Well, what I like about the fact that you're so young and have so much experience mm-hmm. is we're competing globally.
Exactly.
It's not a regional, it's not a local, it's a global competition.
Right.
And I think we're doing the right thing to step up the
right.
step up the
effort. We have to. And, you know, I have three kids, and all three are within the Shelby County school system. And, you know, it hits home. When I was in Japan, I saw what they were doing, and it was very aggressive. I mean, the young students there, they were attending evening classes. They had to test into high school or into middle school. And so they went to school on the weekends. Another thing, they had to clean their own schools.
Oh, really?
So you didn't see toilets trashed or garbage everywhere mm-hmm. or graffiti on the walls. And I'm not saying that that's what you see here in all our schools, but the point there, if you mess it up, you got to clean it up. And so that was one thing that just struck me. I was like, wow, they have so much respect for their teachers, mm-hmm. and they have so much respect for their schools. And you see that they instill that into the young kids starting in elementary school, and you can see the difference in some of those areas.
Well, that is really interesting that the choices you've made mm-hmm. to going to Japan and seeing that, you didn't know why you were seeing all of that,
right.
but now you know.
Yeah.
Because exactly you right. see the disparity mm-hmm. of their education mm-hmm. versus ours.
Right.
And you bring a very unique perspective to this entire situation.
Well, I appreciate that.
One other thing that we're always talking about is public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your thinking on public safety and what's happening here and all around the area and the country, as a matter of fact? What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, here, when you have youth who have dropped out of school, they don't have any other means to support themselves, to feed themselves, I think you see that leads to a life of crime. And when you have no jobs, lack of education, there's nowhere the place to turn to but that. And so I think that plays a part. It all ties in. When we speak of public safety, we have to speak to economics within the city, and you have to speak to education. And so I want to look at it in a holistic approach. I know that we've had some challenges with the homicide rate of late, but I feel that Mayor Strickland is doing a good job in turning it around. He's getting out into the communities, and he's working with everyone to make sure that we are addressed in this issue. It's going to be tough. It's going to be challenging, but I think that the motivation is there, the willpower is there, and the effort is there. And so we need to continue to work together on making sure that we bring that homicide rate down, that we educate our youth, and mm-hmm. that we have jobs for them once we educate them.
And in your district, mm-hmm. what can you do to affect the constituents where, you know, in your district that, mm-hmm. that like you say, need mm-hmm. the education, mm-hmm. then need the jobs?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to help that?
Well, you know, one thing that we've done, Doctor, that's probably was a little different from when you were on the commission. We've each been allocated certain funds that we really push into our districts. And so what I've done is I've tried to tackle that situation with those dollars that I've been allocated. One thing that I love to support is the Hickory Hill Boys and Girls Club. They do an excellent job with their after school mm-hmm. program. They do an excellent job of giving youth something to do over the summer and on the weekends. There's very good, relationships with, there are very good relationships with the community around the Boys and Girls Club. So that's one thing that I point to that's making a difference. They help with job applications. They help with getting resumes tight together. They help with all of these things. And I think that molds youth. It gives them mentorship. It shows them leadership, and that's one way, that's one institution in my district, in Hickory Hill, that I think that's helping to turn it around. I want to just replicate that as many times as I can, not only in District 12, but all throughout the county, and that's what we have to do. We got to start small. We have to meet the youth where they are, meet the parents where they are, take a holistic approach, and I think expand it from there.
Do you see any, with the public safety, do you see any, what... We hear about it in the news, radio, TV, newspaper, magazines, mm-hmm. about gangs,
mm-hmm.
because they seem to be offering hey, right. we want you in. Right. We're going to give you a job to do. We're going to. Mm-hmm. How do we combat that, or do you see that as a problem?
I see that as a problem. If the family structure is not there, if the support at the school is not there, and I'm not saying that the schools are not working to get that, but they just may not want it. Then there is no other place to turn to but to the gangs, and so we have to break that up. We have to make sure that they know gang life is not something that you want to do because you're going to end up in jail or dead. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make that, you know, known. We have to go in and talk to the gang leaders. I mean, there are some kids they know don't have to be out there in the streets doing what they're doing. The gang leaders ought to release those kids and encourage those kids to get out of this life. And you see that sometimes. The gang leaders know. And so
the gang leaders know?
The gang leaders know. And yet they're Yeah.
Well, wait a minute.
How does
that happen?
Well, you know, you've seen certain stories and you see this in athletics sometimes. I don't know if you've seen certain stories about youth who are growing up on the South Side of Chicago and in some tough communities. Mm-hmm. The leaders of the street gangs say those kids off limits because they're doing well enough to get out of this, and we don't want to hamper that. You see that in certain instances.
That is a real leader.
Yeah.
That can understand we don't want you as a member because you can do better.
And that happens sometimes. What we want is to make that happen more frequently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and the point is, if you really care about this kid like you say you do, and you want to protect this kid like you say you want to protect this kid, encourage them to not do what you're doing. You be the example of what not to do. Mm-hmm. You do it for some kids, let's do it for all of them. Let's send them all away from the street gangs, back to school, back to church, back to their parents, and say, young man, young woman, you don't want this. Mm-hmm. And you know, that reaches some of them. Sometimes it doesn't. But we have to continue to, because they're leaders in those street gangs. And so if we can influence them to do the right thing, when those youth come looking for a leader and they turn to these gang leaders and they know what's right, I think we can start turning these kids back in the right direction. So we got to work every angle.
Who would be the contact person to talk with the gang leaders?
You know, there are various groups out there. There are ex-gang members who are doing this type of work in the community.
Okay, so they have street cred, as you would say.
Yeah, okay. Street credibility. And so I don't want to call out any names.
No, I don't want you to, but you would say former gang members that either saw the light or went to jail and got out or something. That is very
interesting. They do this type of work. They reach out to the gangs, and they're doing this type of work. And so it's important. I know that the city utilizes some of these groups. I don't know if we do in the county, but I think it's important. You got to meet people where they are.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But
I would never dream that a gang leader would help you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that. I've read stories about it, and it happens. And so we just need to make sure we're doing all that we can do. Mm-hmm. And you'll be surprised. Some of those guys know what's right. They can look in the eyes of some of those young men and know that they don't belong out here. We just got to make sure that we're reaching out to them and just creating an avenue, a space for these young folks to come back. And sometimes the preacher can't do it. Sometimes the teacher can't do it. The police officer can't do it. It has to come from others. And so we have to make sure.
It has to come from peers.
It has to come from peers. It has to come from folks who they identify with and feel that they're leaders in that community. And sometimes, you know, it works.
Well, I mean, I think that's fantastic if you can make that work. I've always wondered, how do gangs fund themselves? Is it all through crime? Is it all through?
I mean, probably so. You got crime, you know, drugs. I would venture to say they're certainly not at a 9-to-5 job working to do it. And so, you know, I believe that's how it takes place. And, you know, we got to break up that happening in the city, and we have to, you know, turn it around. Another part of the homicide rate, I believe, are domestic incidences. Right. And so, you know, we have to work that angle as well. I performed some weddings as a commissioner, and I love doing that more than what I did previously. I did a lot of divorces. I don't do as many now, but you just see people get so bent out of shape.
They do.
And they're so passionate. And you know, I've seen, you know, some of my former clients, and I'm like, man, you don't need to go around your spouse or who you're attempting to divorce, because you could harm them. And you just see that passion. And, you know, coming up with ways to address domestic violence would be another thing that I think we need to look at and work on. I believe there are things in place to do that as well.
That is really a smart idea. DV, don't we have a domestic violence court?
And you know, I think that's important, and we have to be sure we support that court and we address those concerns in our community, because you know, a lot of the times the victims know the attackers.
Oh, sure.
And in many instances, you know, as from what I read, in some instances, you know, these are domestic incidents,
and it just spirals out of control. You know as well as I do, the earlier you can intervene in that, it helps some people with anger management.
Right.
But if we can help some people prevent this, that really helps with the homicide rate.
With the homicide rate, I think so.
And what do you see the positive, where do you see government working the best? What area do you see government really working?
Right. In business, I see government providing the infrastructure and space to allow businessmen and entrepreneurs to do what they do best.
Right.
And when we speak to violence, I see us providing the support for groups that are doing the work in the community, but also protecting us. I mean, in the end, we have to be protected and we have to feel safe.
Right.
And the complement of officers as far as the Memphis Police Department, I think that's increasing, and I think they're doing a good job in doing that. And I think the sheriff is doing a good job in supporting this effort. And you know, the MPD and sheriff's office working together is important. So government does that well, I think. And we have to support government in doing that. I mean, just basic public safety, making sure folks feel protected. And I think education is another thing. I mean, I value what ASD is attempting to do in the charter schools, but traditional public education has to be a mainstay in our community, because, you know, every kid needs to be able to walk out of his or her home and go to a school that they can walk to, and that school is a safe school, it's a good school, and it's providing stellar education for that kid to graduate and go on to be a productive citizen. So I think those three areas are core areas where government works best and we need to focus on and continue to support.
And you bring a unique viewpoint to all of this. Where do you see government not working well, and what can we do about it? We just don't want to complain. We want to have a plan to fix the areas that doesn't work. Where do you see it not working as well as you'd like to see?
Well, I think that I turn my attention back to, you know, business and job growth. I mean, we provide the space for businessmen, for entrepreneurs to create the next big it and support them in providing the jobs. I think that's how we solve job growth. We don't necessarily do it by, you know, trying to take that on as a government. So I'd like to see us push that out more, support our entrepreneurs, support, you know, the tech industry. I'm told that Memphis at one point in time was on the cutting edge of technology. We have FedEx here. We have a number of great corporations here who, you know, were really at, who were and are at the cutting edge of technology. We need to grow that. There's a thing called StartCo. Where they incubate tech companies.
Right.
We need to support that effort. I mean, those are the jobs of the future, teaching coding, teaching how to write and design software programs. That's where we are. That's, you know, job growth. That's where job growth will be in the future. That's where the millennials are.
Right.
And so government has to step aside and support that. I mean, we can't do that, but we can support that effort.
You're saying the government get away from trying to do it and support somebody else doing it.
Yes, sir. Especially
that is a unique perspective coming.
Yeah. From a Democrat.
No. I mean, I think it's great.
Right.
You know, Democrat, Republican.
Yes, sir.
And that's the beauty of it, is I see Democrats and Republican working together on this.
Yes, sir.
To try to, you know, bring these programs along.
Yes, sir.
And you're doing you're doing it all.
Well, I appreciate that.
I like that. Do you see anything other than supporting other people? Do you see anything government should be doing that it's not really not focusing on?
Well, you know, oftentimes it's said we have to be more efficient. And I think that that's something that we have to continue to work on. There should not be duplication where we can just use one office to handle something.
Yes.
And not have, you know, the government so expansive that we're falling all over one another trying to get something done. Of course, it's been tried and it's failed, the whole consolidation effort, and you have to respect the voices of the people. But I think there is perhaps space to consolidate more government operations between not only Memphis and county government, but maybe some of the other municipal governments, to where, you know, we can have maybe one office to handle this, streamlined through county government, that helps all seven municipal governments handle a particular task. It just seems odd, or it just seems inefficient, if you have seven offices doing, you know, the same thing,
right?
And so I think that growing efficiency is something that we have to focus on. And to that extent, I'm very supportive of select offices or departments joining in and becoming more efficient, streamlining government to make sure we do it quicker, better, and faster, and without as much cost. I think that that makes sense. And again, people say, well, you're going to cut jobs out, you lose jobs. Not necessarily so. If you're doing it more efficiently, you can perhaps, again, funnel more money into those job growth areas to create more jobs in the private sector.
So you're saying the people that if you have three or four offices, you'd bring them into one and do it efficiently, and then you take the other people and do other things more efficiently.
Right, right.
So it's not about eliminating jobs,
right.
It's about being more efficient.
More efficient and maybe moving around, you know, jobs, as the case may be. You don't know unless you get in and you attempt to do it. But I think that that's something that is something that we can look at. I know that MPD and the Shelby County Sheriff's Office work together a lot, and perhaps there could be more synergy there, especially given what we're experiencing. It's not a city homicide rate, it's a county homicide rate.
It is.
What's going on in the city is affecting the county.
Well, so the city is in the county.
The
so many people say, you know, I'm in Memphis. No, you're in Shelby County
you're
also.
In Shelby County. And that homicide rate affects you just as bad as it affects people in the city.
Right.
And so I encourage our sheriff and our police director. I know they talk all the time. They work together. But if they could do it more, and if there could be more synergy, more collaboration to address this homicide rate, you know, do it. I support it.
I think that's in the last couple of minutes here. Mm-hmm. I know we started an ambulance service.
Right.
Were you for that, or how did that work out?
Yeah, I think I'm for it. And the arguments that were made were, I think, good arguments to take that over.
Mm-hmm.
The response time has to be, you know, as quick as possible.
So especially. You're going back to your, right. your it seems like your key word is efficiency.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Response time. And
Yeah. And I mean, part of my district is unincorporated county,
mm-hmm.
which means they're the first responders, the county.
Right.
And
right.
so we need adequate response time. And I think that this is important. And it's a public safety issue. We don't need people sustaining significant health injury because they're not addressed soon enough. And
right.
so I think that this is important that we do this, and I support it.
Thank you very much. My guest has been County Commissioner Van Turner, and he's got unique ideas. We really appreciate you being here and being involved in politics and giving of yourself to serve the people.
Thank you.
I'm George Flynn. You've been watching In-Depth TV. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time.